Sarah Posner is a tireless chronicler of the religious right, an effective investigative journalist, and compelling author who highlighted the pervasive influence of theocratic authoritarians in the terrorist attack on our democracy on January 6, 2021. As the first anniversary passes, I wanted to reconnect with Sarah for her thoughts on how the nation has handled this assault and its aftermath. Happy New Year and welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Happy New Year, Welton. Thank you for having me again.
Last year, you published essential reporting on the key role Christian nationalists played in the run-up to the January 6 attack. What do we need to remember about that role today?
We need to remember that the Christian right supported Trump throughout his presidency and throughout every scandal and wrongdoing committed by Trump. And that was unabated leading up to January 6th and continues unabated post January 6th. And so, as with everything about Trump, for the Christian right, where they viewed him as a messianic figure, that messianism translated in the election to a belief that it was impossible that Trump could have lost the election but for fraud by Democrats. And so they are strong adherents to Trump's big lie about the election being stolen that drove their either support for January 6th or their acquiescence to January 6th or their attempts to whitewash January 6th or their attempts to blame somebody else for January 6th. And that's where we are today. There are very few, if any, critics of Trump and critics of Trump's big lie in the Christian right.
Yeah. Again and again, we see both media and political leaders downplay the influence of this bloc. Looking back a year later, does it feel like they've learned anything at long last?
I think the media and political commentators tend to downplay the role of the Christian right because they're afraid of backlash that they are anti-religion or anti-Christian or are trying to infringe on the free speech or free exercise rights of these Christians who are just Christian patriots. So I think that there's still an inability to wrap your mind around the idea that this is a political movement, that you're not denigrating anybody's religion by calling out Christian nationalism. But I think there's still a lot of reluctance to address that head on. And I think for many people in the media, it's much easier to address head on militias or far right groups like the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers than it is to try to unpack the role of white Christian nationalism in not only Trump's rise and Trump's presidency, but in the ongoing aftermath of his presidency, where he's seen as someone who was victimized by the deep state.
Do they really understand the Christian right?
Well, I don't think so. I think that they're sort of stuck in the 2004 values voter narrative, where all the Christian right wants is to end same-sex marriage or end abortion, and that they like to pray a lot. And who are we to criticize somebody's religion? But we're not talking about somebody's religion. We're talking about a political movement, a right-wing nationalist movement that seeks to make white, this version of white Christianity, a state religion. So, you know, I think that there's still a reluctance to really grapple with that, even after it became obvious over the course of Trump's presidency that that's what was going on, that this wasn't just a transactional relationship where he promised them Supreme Court justices and they got those Supreme Court justices. It's really about more than that. But I think that there hasn't been a sufficient reckoning over their elevation of him as an anointed figure, as a messianic figure. And there has not been a reckoning with how they have helped advance and promote his propaganda about the election, about him being a victim of the deep state, and so on and so forth.
So, Sarah, who could have done a better job to keep that focus and ascribe the blame where it really belongs?
I think that the Christian right obviously is not the single explanation for Trump, but I think without them, he would not have been able to sustain his presidency. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Trump was very popular with neo-Nazis and white supremacists and violent extremist groups and fascist curious voters. And there aren't enough of those people to elect a president. And so that was a sign of just how extreme his support was. Yet the Christian right went along with that as opposed to going for a different Christian right candidate like Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or something. And so why is the Christian right fine with this autocratic neo-fascist turn? And that, I think, is something that just hasn't been sufficiently grappled with. And I think that, and I'm not making a comparison here to Nazi Germany, but I'm just saying that oftentimes in analyzing the rise of fascists in real time, the role of religion, and in particular Christianity, is often not seen as salient or not not analyzed in the same way.
So what should congressional committees have done in the past 12 months that they haven't done? And what are the consequences that you see of them not doing enough?
I don't know that it's something that a congressional committee could do anything about, because unlike the actual events of January 6th, the actual breaking into the Capitol and attempting to and threatening members of Congress and threatening Vice President Pence and attempting to stop the certification of the election, those things are crimes that are being prosecuted by the Department of Justice. They're crimes and potentially other crimes that are being investigated by the January 6th committee. And I think it's not really the role. I mean, this is a fine line I'm drawing here. I don't think it's the role of the congressional committee to look at the ideology of the of Trump's supporters absent the criminality component there, if you see the line that I'm drawing here. And that's, I think that that could be potentially problematic. That doesn't mean that there should not be scrutiny by the media and think tanks and others over the role that the Christian right played and continues to play in propping up Trump's propaganda and the mythology around Trump as a messianic leader. I mean, I was just critical of people who were afraid to delve into this religious end of it. But I think the role of the media is different than the role of law enforcement and Congress.
What do you see as the ways the political religious right has given cover to the terrorists of January 6th.
Right. Well, absolutely, they have done that. They've given them ideological or propaganda cover. But, you know, obviously that itself is not a crime. But again, it's something that's very important to shed light on, that there are figures in the Republican Party and in the religious right who continue to characterize January 6th as no big deal, or continue to characterize the defendants in the criminal defendants in January 6th as political prisoners. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is a serious political, but not legal, issue that needs to be, I just think that anybody who is continuing to press the idea that January 6th was no big deal, or that the people arrested in connection with January 6th are somehow political prisoners being persecuted for their ideological beliefs, that's some serious ill-intended propaganda that needs a lot of light shed on it. I don't know that it's something for a congressional committee, unless they want to look at the conduct of their colleagues in Congress, which I think would probably be appropriate. Yeah.
Well, so now it's a year since the unthinkable attacks last January. The focus continues to be on what happened, but I know you are keeping an eye on what's likely to be coming next. So what do we need to know about what the white Christian supremacist movement is up to?
The support for Trump's big lie that the election was stolen for him, or maybe a little less dramatically, that our election procedures are rife with fraud. Those are two big propaganda items that are now taken at face value in most religious right political, you know, podcast newsletters, etc. Yeah. That is just an article of faith now. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Christian right has been very supportive and outspokenly supportive of efforts in state legislatures to suppress the vote. And particularly suppress the vote of Black and brown voters and Democratic voters. So I think we're going to see more of that, more of the we need to fix fraud in our elections. And so these are the fixes that we need to do, which are actually fixes that would basically be voter suppression. Yeah. And I think the important thing to keep in mind here is that even without Trump at the helm of the party, the religious right still has an intense interest in maintaining control of the Republican Party and maintaining control of state houses and so forth, because that's essential for them to enact their agenda on religious freedom, church-state separation issues, LGBTQ issues, reproductive rights issues. And so as their numbers shrink as a proportion of the population, they see these anti-democratic, small d, efforts as essential to maintaining control. So while a lot of them still venerate Trump as a messianic figure, God's anointed, and so on and so forth, King Cyrus, a lot of them may have moved past that, or would be willing to go with another candidate, but they're still supportive of we need to do election integrity. This is the big line there, is that our elections are rife with fraud, and so we need to shore it up with election integrity, which is their word for voter suppression. Yeah. So I think that we're going to be headed into a state legislative year this year, where you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see a lot of BS like we saw around the 2020 election, around 2022 midterms, in terms of threatening elections officials, claiming that particular elections that Republicans lost were rife with fraud, although the ones that they won somehow weren't. And it's going to be a really tough year.
There's a widely reported statistic on the growing number of Americans, Republicans in particular, who say violence against the government may be needed. Have you seen numbers for how white evangelicals are answering that question?
Well, I think that the figure that you just cited from that Washington Post poll, I think that it's a little bit misleading in the sense that the question was pretty vague. And I think if you asked a non-conservative, left-leaning person a very open-ended question like that, like, mm-hmm. would it be possible at some point that like violence against the government might be necessary? And it's sort of, if you thought about, if we had a fascist government here in the United States, would violence against it be justified? So I think that the, you know, 1 in 3 number is probably inflated a bit, that like people think, well, you know, maybe there might be some situation where it might be justified, as opposed to thinking that January 6th was justified, for example. Mm-hmm. Right. So I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that particular poll. Mm-hmm. As far as, and I think that there was another poll that Robbie Jones did at Public Religion Research Institute, yeah. that showed that white evangelicals were a little bit more responsive to a question about whether violence could be necessary to protect by patriots to protect America. I can't remember how precisely mm-hmm. how the question was phrased, but yes, there's maybe a little bit more of that kind of sentiment there. But I think, and as far as whether we're headed to a civil war, I think that what we're headed towards is not a civil war, but kind of a hot spot kind of terrorism situation, mm-hmm. where we're probably going to see a lot more people doing things like threatening election workers. Or, you know, we saw the other day someone was arrested for attacking workers at a vaccination clinic. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. It's very scary and it's not good. But it's not the same as an actual civil war.
Yeah. You updated your latest book, Unholy, to include the events of January 6th and the role of the religious right in bringing that about. What are the greatest threats going forward, as you see it? What's the unthinkable event likely to be?
The unthinkable event,
mm-hmm.
That Trump runs again in 2024, that he does not win, he does not win the Electoral College, but he gets election officials in states to change the result. Or does a repeat of January 6th, where, you know, he has his followers storm the Capitol? I think that that could happen in terms of him trying. The precise details maybe are not clear, but the idea that he could run again and then use his pressure and make use of efforts made by Republicans in certain states, through these voter suppression laws, in which they included provisions where they could change the composition of a county election board, mm-hmm. to stack them with political loyalists. So you could see a situation where Georgia Republicans stack county election boards with Trump loyalists and they change election results so that Trump wins Georgia and that helps him win the Electoral College. Or in other states, his supporters, threaten election workers. There's a whole kind of combination of things like that that could happen. And I'm not saying it will happen, but it's not beyond the pale, mm-hmm. given what Republicans in some state legislatures have done already, what Trump supporters have done already, and what Trump is already signaling that he might do. He already tried to pressure the Secretary of State of Georgia to change the election results there in 2020. So do we have any reason to believe that he's not going to try that again in 2024?
So how can Americans better prepare their democracy to repel the next attack when it comes? And are there ways to make it less likely from what you know?
Well, I think people need to be much more engaged in understanding what actually happened on January 6th and not forgetting it and not sort of relegating it to the dustbin of history. Being more involved in contacting their members of Congress, senators, and also do not take your eye off of what is happening in state legislatures, and to maximize the ability of the democracy to actually function without interference by Trump's little armies, really little, you know, it's not always completely clear how you do that. How do you make sure that your county election board hasn't been stacked with Trump loyalists so that they can just change the election results if he doesn't win your county in 2024? I mean, that's not particularly clear, but I think a lot of how you would do that, but I think a lot of people don't even know that it's happening. And so you have to be engaged in the politics in your town, in your county, in your state, because this is not, these are not isolated events going on in just a handful of states. Trump has supporters in many states who have their eye on doing these kinds of things. And I think, you know, also we need to expect more from law enforcement in terms of prosecuting people who threaten or commit acts of violence against public public officials. That doesn't just include, you know, election workers, but also obviously, you know, members of Congress, members of state houses, and also public health officials, as we've seen during the pandemic. So I think people have to grapple with that these are not isolated occurrences, that this is like a wave of this kind of terroristic activity, and that Trump, you know, supports, and eggs on, and you know, we need to really keep our eye on the fact that this is happening, and not ignore it, or not sort of brush it off as just a few bad apples.
Sarah Posner is a reporter with Type Investigations, and her investigative reporting and analysis have appeared in Rolling Stone, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and many others. Sarah is the author of two essential books on the political religious right, most recently, Unholy: How White Christian Nationalists Powered the Trump Presidency and the Devastating Legacy They Left Behind. Sarah, these dynamics will bear very close watching as the midterm election cycle progresses. I know we'll be checking in with you regularly here on State of Belief Radio.
I'd be happy to. Thank you both.